Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and wow, we've got some good information for you today. We're going to be talking with Dr. Frederick Ernst. His phenomenal publication is called Truth, Lies, and the OR, The Good, the Bad, and the Realities. Dr. Ernst, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Donna. Thank you. Pleasure to be here with you.
Well, I'll tell you what. I read your book. In fact, I was just reviewing it before we went on air. And I am so impressed with your openness and your candor. I want my audience to know something about you. You're a practicing anesthesiologist. You've been doing this for well over 40 years. You are also qualified as a subspecialty in pediatric and outpatient anesthesia. You are semi-retired at this time, but prior to that, you were the medical director of two outpatient surgery centers in Alabama. You have authored 11 scientific publications and have done well over 60 presentations at various professional meetings. And you have, for over 6 years, a syndicated medical consumer newspaper column. They call you America's Ralph Nader of Medicine. And in fact, it's titled America's Ralph Nader of Medicine Speaks Out. It's been carried in over 70 newspapers nationwide. And right now, you're very much active in patients' rights advocacy work. You do private consulting. You are a medical legal expert witness testimony for both plaintiffs and defense counsel in medical malpractice cases. Now, I know that your book was done in association with a man that had a very strong influence on you. In fact, you dedicated your book to him, Dr. William G. Pace, the third MD. And he has passed on, but he was a professor of surgery and the assistant dean for the Ohio State University College of Medicine. And he was the professor emeritus at that university for many years. He authored over 100 scientific publications, was a contributing editor for three surgical textbooks, and produced 17 scientific movies. And he, too, served as an expert medical witness. This book of yours, I think if every person that is listening to the show would get a copy of the book and would pass it along, their eyes would be open to a realistic understanding that the world of medicine has many challenges to it. And I have a deep respect for it. I really do in many ways. But it's scary. Your book really was an eye-opener. And for you as a medical professional to do this, why were you compelled to do this? Why did you and Dr. Pace feel like you had to put together Truth, Lies, and the OR?
Well, Donna, this was our second book together. Our first book came off press in 1996. It was called Now They Lay Me Down to Sleep. And we both were concerned about the increasing numbers of medical malpractice cases that have been going on in this country for the last 25, 30 years. We were also concerned about things each of us had seen during our careers in medicine that we weren't happy with. And we felt that in order to curb this, there was one of two ways to approach it. One was to try to change the profession from within, which we both knew was nigh near impossible, or the other was to try to educate the public, to give them information, guidance, guidelines, that would help them become more knowledgeable, proactive medical consumers. And hopefully by doing this, it would help them stay out of medical care situations that fall below the accepted standard of care. And Donna, the American Medical Association will admit that 5 to 10% of all physicians in this country practice below the accepted standard of care. If you are willing to accept the further fact that there are a number of other physicians who never make these statistics and should, and they don't because of political and or economic reasons. As you know, the medical care system in this country is a referral system.
Mm-hmm.
So if you add those that should be and that aren't, you're probably looking at as many as 1 in 7 to 1 in 8, meaning as many as 100,000 of the 650,000 physicians in this country who practice below the accepted standard of care on an ongoing or intermittent basis. And both Dr. Pace and I found that to be a very startling, unnerving fact. And, you know, when you're dealing with human life, there just isn't room for this. You know, granted, we're all human, and we are going to make errors because we're human. But there's a difference between errors made out of our humanness and errors which come from gross negligence.
Gross negligence, incompetence.
Right.
You are addressing something, and I want to share a little story that was a very personal experience for me. I had a neighbor a few years back who was in nuclear medicine. That was her passion. She was a nurse, and she was going on to expansive training. And she told me how in many of the pharmacies, there were lists of physicians that should never, ever be allowed to operate, also in hospitals. And there was a list where if this physician came up and wanted to give certain medicines to people or whatever, it was to be denied.
Uh-huh.
And that there was, among the nurses themselves, they had an understanding of those that they classified as the butchers and those that were really competent. And when we have conversations like this with someone who's in the professional arena, because it often is considered an ivory tower lead. And here in the United States, we have put people in the medical profession up on pedestals. Most of us do not even know an inch of the lingo that is used, and we're overwhelmed by it. And if someone is critically ill, we feel like we should just totally trust. And it's only been in the last, I think, 10 years where more about the patient advocacy positioning has come out. I mean, you hear about that. You talk to people in the medical area, as I have. You have all of this good that is being done. But on the other hand, there is so much that is undermining what could be good. It's really a scary situation for a patient. A lot of people will not go for medical care. One, maybe they can't afford it. But two, it's just like a woman I talked to that is having extreme problems with her wrist. She's a person that works in a grocery store, a cashier. So she's using those muscles to extreme 8 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
So there's a result of that. Her surgeon is saying, well, we need to go in and do an operation. And she said, I don't want to do this. And we had a conversation, and she said, I'm going to check this out a little bit more. And in your book, I'm going to make copies of the pages in your book and share it with her. We are really in a dilemma. And your book, I think, brings so much information out that is just right there in black and white. And you address anesthesiology, what people need to be aware of. I mean, this is something that is so important. I mean, it's amazing to me.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and what it pleases me is that you, as a non-medical person, sees the importance of patients becoming more knowledgeable, understanding things that they need to understand. Understanding about getting a second opinion and realizing when you get a second opinion, you must get it in a different office from where your first opinion comes from, because it's very difficult for a partner to go against what one of his other partners has said. It's just not politically good. And you also must understand that if your second opinion is going to have any validity, it needs to come from a physician who is at least as equal in training and quality as where your first opinion came from. Otherwise, it's no good. And if you need a third opinion, you get a third opinion until you feel good that you have as much knowledge as you can get, and so you can then make a wise, intelligent decision for yourself.
I think that is so important. And sadly, in our world today, and I have seen tragic results with this, it's like, gee whiz, all I have to do, especially when it comes to surgery, you go in, you'll have a quick fix, everything will be fine. And there, the human body is so intricate.
It's complex.
It is incredibly complex. And when you go in, I mean, not everybody, we don't have little clones here that are going to follow the exact same parameters, one right after the other. I'm sorry, we are not an assembly line. It doesn't work that way. You will have a nerve in one place in one person's body, and you'll maybe have it an inch off in somebody else's.
That's exactly, and that's the variation in human physiology. And,
yes.
And Donna, if I were to give you an anesthetic, a general anesthetic today, the way I give it to you today may be totally different than how I give it to you a week from today, a month from today, a year from today, because of what your body's physiology is doing. And the body's physiology is in a constant dynamic state of changing back and forth and so forth. So, you know, on any given day, our body's physiology is one way, and tomorrow it may be a little different.
And I think that that is going to be the cutting edge in medical science in this century. I think there are going to be those that will be able to understand that and will work so that medicine, anesthetics, all of these things will be adapted to, and it's going to take some very, very sophisticated thinking to comprehend that, because one something doesn't fit all, and that is what you bring out in your book. Let's talk about selecting the correct hospital. We have people that are listening to this show from all over the country, even in different parts of the world. When it comes to going in for a hospital, you may live in the middle of Kansas, you might be in New York City. How do you make a choice? And do you have a choice?
Well, in most cases, you do have a choice, because we'll talk about surgery here, Donna. In most situations, a surgeon is on a staff of more than one hospital, probably two, unless it's a small town where there's only one hospital. First thing is you want to find out about the accreditation of the hospital. Most all hospitals are accredited by JCO. That's the Joint Commission. And the accreditation report from JCO is supposed to be public knowledge. You may have to go to the executive office of that hospital and ask to see their accreditation. And in particular, what you want to find out is what they might have been cited for as deficiencies, or what were weaknesses that had to be corrected before the accreditation that might have been conditional at first became permanent. Because, you know, that'll tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
You want to find out what's the nurse ratio to patient. You know, in an ICU, it should be no more than 1-2. On the floor, maybe 1-8, roughly. I mean, don't hold me to this, but but generally speaking, you want to know, and is this an RN, or is it an LPN, or is it a certified nursing assistant? The days of the RN giving direct patient care are almost gone. They are doing more administrative charting type things, supervisory type things, and actual patient care is now done more by the practical nurse and the certified nursing assistant. You want to find out if it's a smaller hospital, what comprises the anesthesia department? Is there an anesthesiologist there, or is it only nurse anesthetist? Because that makes a big difference. If there's no anesthesiologist, then the nurse anesthetist in every state except New Hampshire answer to the surgeon, the podiatrist, the internal medicine, whatever physician they're giving anesthesia or sedation for, because the nurse anesthetist is not the final line of medical legal responsibility. I think that it would be good to find out what percentage of a hospital staff, is doctors trained outside of the United States. And in smaller areas, semi-rural type hospitals, there seems to be a leaning or a propensity for non-American trained doctors or doctors who have had problems
mm-hmm.
with their licenses
yes.
to get drawn to those places, because those places are harder to recruit to. So these facilities tend to relax their credential status, you know, for what are they looking for, and they'll take someone because they need it, and they'll overlook maybe some things in the past of that physician that were less than satisfactory. So I think, you know, in smaller areas, you really, in my opinion, you really have to do your homework. And, I mean, I've had friends who live in a small area who blatantly say, we will never be a patient in that hospital. We'll go the 30 miles to a larger town
mm-hmm.
and a larger hospital. So, you know, again, these are things. Is the emergency room staffed 24/7 by a doctor who's trained in emergency medicine, or is it staffed only part-time by a physician who is not necessarily trained in emergency medicine? These are just a few of the things, Donna, I think that you should be thinking about when you're thinking of, you know, especially elective. Now, in an emergency situation, we're all pretty much in the same boat. We don't have a whole lot of choices if we're in a life-threatening emergency situation.
Right.
But certainly in elective, you've got the time to take the time to do some research, do some checking. Some of the best sources of information to find out about doctors, especially in surgery and anesthesia, is going to be an OR nurse or anesthesia, because we see surgeons operate all the time. We see who gets in trouble. We see how they get out of trouble. We see how good they are technically. And these same people can tell you about us, anesthesia personnel, and which are stronger, more qualified anesthesia personnel that you might want to ask for. And you do have the right to request a specific person in anesthesia. But you've got to do this up front. During your preoperative anesthesia visit, which is hopefully not 10 minutes before your surgery.
Now, let me ask you a question. You
sure.
brought up a very good point about talking to someone in the OR. Now, how can you go about talking to somebody in OR? Because some of these people, I've been around enough medical staff through the years where they will say, well, I'll tell you on the QT, but you know, if you were to ask me about this someplace else, I wouldn't even acknowledge that I had talked to you. I don't know if it's a white wall, what you want to call it, but it is really of concern. But I've noticed, especially the nurses,
right.
at least this has been in my experience, if you talk with them and you can make friends with them in some way, or if you know of someone in medicine,
That's right. That's exactly right. The key is, do you personally know someone affiliated with that hospital, or do you have a friend who knows someone that's affiliated with that hospital? That's how you get the inside information. Because, sure, if somebody comes up to you, you don't know who they are, you're going to be guarded as to what you say, for obvious reasons, certainly for your job security. But if you get somebody, you know, on a one-on-one personal that you either know or you have a good friend who knows, this is the way that you do. Now, in some states, Donna, we have what's called physician profiling. because we do not have a national medical Better Business Bureau
mm-hmm.
that you can call and find out. But there are probably 10, 15, 20 states that have some degree of physician profiling, which means you can call the state medical board in that state, and generally that state medical board is in the capital of that state, and you can ask for the track record of that physician in that state. And that track record may give you suits that have been filed against the doctor, suits that have been, that is malpractice suits that have been filed or settled, any problems the doctor has had with license or with hospital privileges, or any trouble with the law as far as like controlled substances, either dispensing them incorrectly or using them
mm-hmm.
or any kind of problem. And this is, to me, this is important information that you want to try and get when you're assessing who you want to take care of you. Because if a physician doesn't have a good track record, I'm certainly not going to go to him or her.
Well, I know I paid the price dearly myself by being under the care, and I learned of this by accident. I was under the care of a particular physician and was given too much of a substance that created a chemical change in me that was a precursor to internal cancer. And when this finally started evolving, we were able to stop it, but I had to go through two surgeries to be able to correct what was done. I learned later the man finally had his license taken away from me, but I was one of thousands of women that were affected by this person who should have had his license removed.
Well, and Donna, I'm sorry that I have to say this, but you know, there are a number of physicians who should have their license taken away after certain malpractice cases or wrongs that have been validated. And for one reason or another, a state medical board is reluctant to do this. Maybe this person is strong politically, or a community leader, or whatever. And so they turn their shoulder, they turn their head. We both know this is wrong, but it happens. It happens all the time. What can I say? But it's the reality of our American medical system.
This is something that when you look at medicine historically, it has been a pattern. In Europe, as the medicine advanced, it was very much of that positioning. There is this attitude, well, we'll police ourselves, and it doesn't work, like you said. And I think educating the consumer, as the consumer has become more alert, more aware, and is challenging more.
Right.
Then
that's the key.
They are being forced to recognize they're not dealing with an ignorant public. Many of them are, but people are asking questions. And
well, and Donna, it's so important to emphasize to our listeners that as a medical consumer, you have a right to ask any question to a doctor, including, doctor, how many times have you been sued? Have you ever had any actions taken against your license? And you should get an honest answer with respect.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, this is, to me, this is a red flag waving in front of you saying, get out of there and go where those kind of questions are not a threat to that doctor. Because if they are a threat, the next question has to be, doctor, why should these questions be a threat to you? Why should they put you on guard? Why should they irritate you?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good understanding to have. And I think when we can get past our fear and realize that we do have choice, and
you
that
do.
There is more than one doctor.
And always remember this point, too, Donna. I think this is very important. We are not doing you a favor to render medical treatment to you. You are paying us to do this. And in many cases, you are paying dearly. Why shouldn't you demand top quality care like you would from your plumber, your electrician, your banker, your dentist, whoever else? But historically, we have been reticent to do this with the medical field because we put them on pedestals. We view them as almost godly
Mm-hmm.
We put our pants on the same way you or anybody else does, one leg at a time. Don't put us on a pedestal, Donna. We are just as human as the patients that we deal with, that we treat.
Yes, and I think that there's another point, too, and that is that because of that attitude, it is such a disservice to another, to a professional such as yourself, if you lie about taking medicines or you do not acknowledge certain things. It's like vitamins can make a difference. You're an anesthesiologist. If someone is taking particular amounts of vitamins, you need to know what they are because that changes the physiology.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't emphasize that point. As a patient, you have an obligation to us, as your physician, to be straightforward, honest. I don't know. I don't care how embarrassed, how guilty you might feel about what you've done or not done, but if you're going to expect us to be able to give you the best, healthiest treatment, then you've got to let us know everything about you. Herbs, for example, some of them make a big difference in the kind of anesthesia that I can give you, or can cause bleeding, or can cause unnecessary high blood pressure. And if that happens, and I don't know that you're on a certain or have been on a certain herb, then I don't know why this is happening. And I need to know why it's happening, if it happens. You understand?
Oh, I understand perfectly, because what you're dealing with is chemistry. You are going to be giving someone an anesthetic that is supposed to have a particular result on what is considered a normal physiological condition.
Correct.
If that patient is taking any kind of chemical that could alter the chemical patterning of what you are giving them, it can cause an extreme disruption. It can stop a heart. It can affect the internal organs. It can absolutely not work. I mean, I've known of someone that when they were taking a particular supplement, they were going to go in for surgery. And during the process, the anesthesiologist had enough sense to ask a certain question, and the person had not gone under. They were wide awake.
Right.
And they said, what's going on here? This isn't working. And they found out the person had been taking a particular nutritional supplementation that they had not been, they weren't unaware of it, number one, that it made any difference, and number two, it actually blocked the anesthesia.
Right. You couldn't be more on target, Donna, and that's why it is just critical that we know everything. And the other thing is, if in the case of anesthesia, if we don't ask certain questions, then volunteer the information, because
mm-hmm.
you don't know as a medical consumer, you may not know what you may think is small and not real big may be a big thing to us.
Yes.
So, you know, if we don't ask, just because we don't ask certain questions, that doesn't mean that you should withhold the information or say, well, doctor, do you want to know this about me? Or you didn't ask this. Is this important? So it has to be open to two-way street dialogue.
I agree. Dr. Ernst, we have to take a break. Would you be able to stay another 15 minutes with me?
I'll be happy to.
All right.
Donna.
This is Donna Siebel. My guest is Dr. Frederick Ernst. We're talking about truth, lies, and the OR, the good, the bad, and the reality. This is information that can have a significant difference in your wellness, in the wellness of a friend, a loved one. It's worth listening to. We're going to take a break. We're going to be right back with Dr. Ernst. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We have a wonderful interview today with Dr. Ernst. He is a man of accomplishment. He and another physician, Dr. Pace, who has passed away, they've put together their second book, Truth, Lies, and the OR. Dr. Pace was a man that contributed so much, and he mentored Dr. Ernst, and together they became a very powerful team. Dr. Ernst, I wanted you to talk about one of your stories in here, and you give actual cases, which I think is just phenomenal. And it's your chapter 3, it says, Who Will Watch Over Me While I Sleep? You talk about Butch Shockett. Uh-huh. And these two brothers were out in June of 1999. They went hunting, and tell the rest of the story about what happened with these two brothers and the condition that resulted.
Well, it was, as I recall, it was slippery, and one brother, slipped on lichen rock and fell, and the gun went off, and he sustained a gunshot wound, and his brother got him to the closest nearby hospital. His brother, amongst other things, did have diabetes. However, in the course of the preoperative evaluation by the CRNA, and this was a smaller hospital, so if I remember correctly, there was no anesthesiologist. It was a CRNA. And they either glossed over, or the CRNA didn't really hear the answer, or he didn't hear the question. But at any rate, the fact that he was a diabetic on treatment did not get well established. And during surgery, anesthesia will raise the blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And his blood sugar went out of off the chart, so to speak. I mean, it was way elevated. And he, as a result, nearly went into diabetic coma because, he wasn't tested. His blood sugar at the time prior to going to sleep was not adjusted with some short-acting insulin or whatever to get it down into a decent range so that he would not suffer any problems with elevated sugar. I think that really what this case represents, and I have to say that I have a great deal of respect for the field of nurse anesthesia. In my whole career, I have been working with CRNAs, and for 15 years I taught them in training, student nurse anesthetists in training. So I believe very strongly in the anesthesia care team concept, which is anesthesiologist, supervising nurse anesthetist. So you have two sets of hands, mm-hmm. anesthesia hands on every case. In the smaller hospitals, this is not the case, and this was one. And so it was, for whatever reason, this nurse anesthetist just didn't do a complete job. And, surgeons get little, if any, anesthesia training in their residency. So they really care about is my patient doing well at the head of the table? That's mm-hmm. all I want to know. And if you get into trouble, many times they will not know how to get out of that trouble, that anesthesia trouble. And so it falls on the anesthesia personnel that's doing the case. And if it's a CRNA that does not have an anesthesiologist working with him or her, it can be a problem. I'm not saying that in all cases that's the case, because there are some very committed, very highly qualified CRNAs who can work very well independently. But there are some that don't. And that's the same for anesthesiologists. There are some anesthesiologists who can work very well on a solo basis. But then there are others who can't work as well for whatever reason. So I think that was the lesson kind of to learn from that case.
Let's address something. How to evaluate anesthesia care providers, because you emphasize, and this is your area of specialty.
Right.
You've made some very good points here. How can we evaluate one? Now, we've talked about talking with staff in OR. If you have the chance where you can do that, or you know someone that's in the medical arena that can do that for you, usually they are very, very open. This has been my experience with people when you have a chance to talk to them.
Right.
So tell us about the certification for someone in that positioning. And you have different classifications. You have the AA. Break it down for us.
Well, let's start from the top, Donna. And the top would be the anesthesiologist. This is an MD or DO that's gone to medical school, and then after that has had at least 4 years of postgraduate training in the specialty of anesthesia. Once they finish that training in a board, American Board of Anesthesiologists approved program, and with the blessing of the chairman of that program, they can enter into the board examination system to become board certified in anesthesia. And board certification in this country by one of the 24 specialty boards of the American Board of Medical Specialists is the top attesting to quality that we have. Now, that doesn't mean that just because you're board certified, you may not make mistakes, but that's the best that we have to attest that somebody is qualified, has had the top training, and so forth. When you enter into the examination system as an anesthesiologist, you take a written exam first, and you must pass that. And you're given three attempts to pass that. Once you pass that, then a year after passing it, you do an oral examination, and you're given three chances to pass that. Once you pass that oral examination, then you become board certified in anesthesia. And since 2000, when you're granted board certification, it is for a time limit period of 10 years. At the end of 10 years, you've got to go through a re-examination process to become board certified again in anesthesia.
Man, oh man, that is a big step towards
improvement. Well, it is, and this just came about in 2000, and more specialties of the American Board of Medical Specialists are moving towards this recertification process, and they're doing it to try to ensure and show the public that they are trying to board certify physicians who are keeping current, who are still practicing the accepted standard of care, both clinically and didactically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you finish a residency in a board-certified program, you can claim to be board-eligible, but you can't be board-certified until you pass that exam. So one of the questions that you want to ask is, are you board-certified, doctor? And if the doctor says, no, I'm board eligible, okay, the next question that you should be asking is, doctor, how long have you been board eligible? And if the answer is more than 3 to 4 or 5 years, then your next question has got to be to yourself, why is this doctor taking so long to become board certified?
Mm-hmm.
And chances are it's one of two reasons. Either this doctor doesn't have the knowledge that is required to pass those exams, or he or she is too busy ringing the cash register to study and take those exams. And so my question to you then would be, is that the type of physician you want giving you anesthesia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The second group of people that give anesthesia in this country are the certified registered nurse anesthetists.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who must have a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing and then at least 1 year of critical care nursing experience in either the emergency room, the operating room, or the intensive care, one of those three areas. After that, they have to take the graduate record exam, and then if they're accepted, they go into nurse anesthesia training, which averages 24 to 28 to 30 months of training, both didactic and clinical. And they will come out with a master's degree in nursing with a specialty in anesthesia. Basically, it's a master's in nurse anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And when they finish that, then they have to take a national certifying examination to become a certified registered nurse anesthetist. Now, this exam is in no way the same or close to the board examination that a physician takes. Remember, these are nurses who do not have a medical school education or a license to practice medicine. But the practice of anesthesia is the practice of medicine. And so these are nurses that are basically practicing an area of medicine with as much training as they can get without a medical school degree. CRNAs, once they become certified, can work independently from an anesthesiologist. And in about 20% of the anesthetics given in this country, CRNAs are working not under direct supervision of an anesthesiologist. And in many cases, these are the small and the semi-rural type hospitals, because those type hospitals can't afford economically to have both an anesthesiologist and a nurse anesthetist. When they are not directly under an anesthesiologist, then they answer, as I said earlier, to the surgeon, the podiatrist, the internal medicine, the OB guy, a dentist, whoever it is that they're giving sedation or anesthesia for, because with the exception of New Hampshire, they're not the final line of medical legal responsibility. The third party in this anesthesia care provider is the AA, the anesthesia assistant. There are five training programs now in the United States for anesthesia assistants. There are about 110 nurse anesthetist training programs. The AA comes to the table with a Bachelor of Science degree with pre-medical prerequisites. They are taken directly out of college with a Bachelor of Science degree. They have to take the graduate record exam, and then they go into anesthesia assistance training, which is, again, 24 to 28 months, pretty much the same type of training that CRNAs get. Now, when they finish, they have to take a national certifying exam, which is not the same as the nurses, the CRNAs, or the doctors. Once they pass that, then at the present time, they are able to be licensed in about 15 states only. But they must always work under the direct supervision of an anesthesiologist. No other physician. It has to be an anesthesiologist. I think that, as a patient, you definitely want to know what the composition of your anesthesia team is going to be. And furthermore, we have a 1-on-4 supervision rule, Donna, that exists in this country that allows an anesthesiologist to supervise up to 4 rooms simultaneously in any given geographic institution.
Amazing.
But there are no guidelines as to how sick patients may be in these 4 rooms, how extensive the surgery may be. This becomes a decision that's made at each individual facility on a day-to-day basis. So, if you happen to be supervising 4 rooms, you may be spread way too thinly as an anesthesiologist, and it only takes 1 room to go sour to pull your attention away from the other 3 rooms. Now, as a patient, you have the right to know up front what the supervision ratio is going to be. and you also have the right to respectfully request closer supervision, one on three, maybe one on two, if you're having open heart or organ transplantation or something like that.
Dr. Ernst, we are out of time. It has just been absolutely fabulous. For those of you listening, this book is called Truth, Lies, and the OR. It is information that should empower you. I recommend it highly. Quickly, let's have your website, doctor, so that they can go to that.
Website, Donna, is www.drf, as in Frederick, Ernst, E like in Edward, RNST.com.
Thank you, Dr. Ernst. It has been a delight, and I look forward to perhaps the next time when we'll be able to chat and pass on more of what we need to know as consumers. Thank
Donna,
you.
Donna, thank
being
you
my
for
guest.
Inviting me. It's been my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open at 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all you need to do is give me a buzz. If this is your first time of being a listener, I'm delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So I encourage you, just give me a call. All I need is your first name initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling from. And then after that, let me do my stuff. I consider myself an information resource, and I invite you to utilize it. So, again, give me a buzz if you like, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I received a cute little story from a listener, Carol. She said the graveside service had barely ended when there was a tremendous burst of thunder accompanied by a huge distant lightning bolt followed by more rumbling thunder. There was a little old man who was looking at the pastor. They were burying his wife, and he calmly looked at the pastor and he said, "Well, she's there." I know, it's corny. But anyway, just couldn't pass that one up. Thank you, Carol. Okay, Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, Canadians. 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Chris Daner, talking to a distant day. And then next week we've got a phenomenal lineup. We're going to be talking on Monday with Natalia and Susan. We're going to be talking about their teachers wear fur coats. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun. Lots of good stories to share. And then on Tuesday, we're going to be talking about the best things fathers can do. Will Glennon is going to be my guest. Highway from Hell, Ruth Moonstone, Star White, a personal story that will really touch your heart and mind. Alan Davidson, Body Brilliance. This is a man that has overcome obstacles and personal, dynamic, emotional, mental, physical, spiritual storms. And he is awesome, to say the least. And then we're going to be playing the best of Donna on the 13th because I am going to be en route to the East Coast. So I haven't figured out how to do a show on a plane yet. One day we'll be able to do it, but that's not going to be anytime soon, to the best of my knowledge. So I wanted to give you that information. You don't want to miss any of it. By the way, the shows are always archived. If you miss the show, if you've listened to the show and say, "Oh, I want to hear more of this again," just know you can go right in to BBS Radio Archives, and you can do exactly that. You can tell your friends. They don't have to miss any of this wonderful programming. One of the most important aspects, I feel, of what I'm able to bring to you through the Donna Siebel Show is the fact that there are a lot of good people on this planet that sincerely care about making it a better place. How can we do this? Communication. And via the Internet, we can reach all over the world. Knowledge has to be shared, I feel, and that's what I love. I review 400 to 600 books a year, and not all of them are on this show. I wish sometimes I had more time because there are so many good people out there. And if nothing else, I want you to realize that. And that's what you have to look for. You have to look for those people, those environments that are actively involved in making things better. The good old ways are not always the best. The only way we're going to be able to improve anything, whether it's economically, physiologically, spiritually, intellectually, I don't care what venue you're interested in, it's by asking questions and seeking out the people that are willing to find answers that are going to empower us and, again, make life better. And that is so very, very important. Well, I realize we're coming close to running out of time, so I wanted to be sure to tell you that I'm going to be on at, rem.fm.com radio in Spain on June the 9th. That's this Monday. Now, it is going to be early in the morning, but you would be able to listen to the broadcast in Spain. That's what I said. The Internet is absolutely phenomenal, and it is going to be a live broadcast, and I'm going to be interacting with the people in Europe on the phone over there. So it's really quite exciting. Well, before we close out, I just wanted to share this wonderful poem by Jacqueline O'Reilly. I have this exquisite picture of a blue sky, which right now we don't have in the Seattle area. We've got a lot of grand winds. Feels like fall instead of spring, summer. But she's got this wonderful poem that makes me feel that hope is eternal for the weather change. This is how it reads. On a warm spring day, I like to watch the clouds, animals appear and float on by. Look, is that a horse or a dog? So many different shapes. What do they look like to you? Remember playing that game when you were a kid? I do. And it was so much fun. It would occupy me in the car. What do you see when you look at the clouds floating in the wide open blue skies above you? Well, this is Donna Siebel. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never relinquish that individuality. It is yours. You were born to it, and you have to respect it, I feel. And you do that by earning the right of accepting your journey and realizing that your choices are important. So being informed is really something you want to have in your life experience. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back right here, same time, same place, on the Donna Sebo Show here on BBS Radio. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.